Greetings and salutations, friends and followers of the Lively Arts. This is Jay Michaels here in the Passion Pit, bringing you one-on-ones with some of the movers, the shakers, the arts makers in the indie theater scene. But how do you know who's a player in this splintered world of indie arts and off-Broadway? Through services like Oplaud. Oplaud lists, promotes, markets, and reviews the best of indie theater. You can't get applause without Oplaud. Andrew Andrews, the brains behind this show of shows, will now enlighten us exactly what Oplaud can do for you.
Hello, this is Andrew.
Andrew, this is Jay Michaels.
Hey, Jay Michaels, how are you?
Very good. If I'm on the line, you're on the air.
Oh, no.
Well, it's being recorded, so eventually you'll be on the air.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. How was your holiday season?
Holiday season was great. It was nice and quiet and just what I needed before hitting the ground running for the new year. And you?
Pretty much the same.
I hear you.
I guess we're both in the same boat.
Well, you're taking New York by storm right now with Oplaud.
Oplaud, yes.
Our listeners are used to hearing me talk about independent artists, and I'm still talking to an independent artist, but it takes a real artist to be able to support artists, and that's what you're doing. Why don't you tell everyone about Oplaud?
Well, Oplaud is basically a recommender service that tries to connect shows, especially off-Broadway shows, with the people that will love and enjoy them.
That's terrific. How do they do it?
Well, basically what happens is somebody attends a show, and then they rate it from 1 to 5 stars based on how much they like it. And then we look out for other shows that have, you know, something in common with that show. And whenever we find an upcoming show that looks like a person would enjoy it based on what they've said in the past, then we'll recommend it to them.
So you essentially send out a reviewer, if you will, who will see it. And then Oplaud will give it its own particular 1 to 5 star rating. And then let's say it's a musical, your subscribers would then get an email or something saying, hey, if you enjoyed this musical, you'll love this musical. And so aside from giving it your own recommendation, you invite audience to see it.
Right. I mean, it's not so important what we think of the show, because let's face it, everybody has different opinions of, you know, what's good and what's not good. But what's really important is what somebody else is going to think about that show, right? So if they saw one show that they really liked, let's say it was a show about baseball, and they really liked that show, and then another show came out a little while later, and it was also about baseball, then we would say, hey, we saw that you liked this other show about baseball, and here's another show about baseball. Why don't you check it out?
That's terrific. Where did this idea come from? How did you figure to do this?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you there because broke up a little bit.
How did you figure to do this? What flash in your brain made you decide I'm gonna be the matchmaker to the American theater?
Well, it's interesting because when I first moved to New York 5 years ago, I found myself inundated with how many different shows there were, and just amazed at how many, you know, how many things were out there that I would never find, or that I might find but not know if I would enjoy it or not. So it really came out of my own desire to improve my own life in terms of trying to say, okay, tonight, what is the one show that I would enjoy seeing more than any other show? And I think that a lot of other people would benefit from that as well.
So this is a new concept you're doing, it's the age-old thing about the critics in the good old days, they would go see a show and they would endorse it. They would write an article about it. So you're taking it from that point of view. You're building a community when you really get down to it.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, no, yeah, please go on.
I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
I was really impressed when you told this to me. Firstly, you're a nice guy. You've been absolutely wonderful on so many of the shows that have been in there. And I've always thought that the problem with off-Broadway is that everybody's doing their own thing. The whole point of it is it's do it yourself. So it's almost like a disconnect, if you will. And you're providing this very valuable connection. So the entire community, the artists and the audience are able to come together, which I think is great.
Right. And I think that the more people that see the value of coming together and, you know, it's not about your show and my show and their show. It's about all of our shows and trying to find what are the common denominators that will connect the right people. Because, you know, if somebody goes to your show and they don't like it, you don't want them telling everybody else, oh, I saw that show, I didn't like it, right? yeah. But what you want is to find the right people to come to your show, the people that are going to come to your show and say, that was a great show, it was exactly what I was looking for. And so that's really what I'm trying to do, is find who are the right people to see every show and what is the right show for every person to see.
Really clever. And that's the 21st century part of this thing. As much as you're like Brooks Atkinson and you're telling us what's the best show, you're telling it to the right audience. Nowadays, things are so splintered. You know, you could spread the word on a show, but 90% of the people listening don't want to go see it. You're focusing on who can go see it. And I think that's terrific. Can it go in the other direction? Can, like, let's say I go see a show and I think it's brilliant. Can I get on Applaud's website and say, you got to go see this? It's really marvelous.
Well, definitely. I mean, that's one of the components of Applaud, is for people to not only rate the shows, but also to provide their own reviews. So if somebody wants to go in and say, hey, this is what I liked about the show, this is what I didn't like about the show, somebody else can read that and decide, oh, yeah, I can see this is something that I want to go see, and then they can decide to go see that.
So it doesn't need the Applaud seal of approval so much as I go see a show, I can go onto your site and log in that show?
Right. I mean, the Applaud seal of approval is only meaningful to Applaud, right? I mean, what really matters to you is what you're going to like and not like.
Right. Right. Very cool. So you've become this interactive site also.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up again.
You can. So you're interactive as well. So aside from us wanting to hear what you have to say, you're hearing what we have to say.
You know what, Jay? This is breaking up really bad, and I think that it might be the phone that I'm using. Can you try to call me on the other number that I gave you?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Okay. So instead of splicing the two pieces together, I thought this would be a great chance to simply run the Applaud commercial. That, and I just don't know how to splice them together. You see, Mary Elizabeth Macari knows all the technical stuff for our podcast, and she's just not here. She's in the studio rehearsing her latest musical event, I'm So High, Reverend Mary's Reefer Review. This gala song fest spotlights the tunes that were crooned in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. That right. Vintage favorites about that hand-rolled airline ticket that we all know and love, marijuana. Now, don't get conservative on me. Mary will be back soon to share all that she knows about the musical history of weed.
Would you like more people to attend your show? At Applaud, we combine artificial intelligence and human intuition to expand your audience and increase ticket sales. For a limited time, we'll help you fill your seats free of charge to prove our value. That's right, we will promote your show at no cost if you begin right away. Sound good? For more information, email promote@applaud.com.
Boy, I hope your editing software is good.
Oh, no, it's terrible. I'm going to combine both calls, and that'll be that. I'll figure out what to get rid of. So once again, for our listeners, Applaud is the 21st century, the new kind of review site where it works interactively, where aside from reviewers from Applaud coming to see a show, offering its own endorsement, it then opens the field up for audience members to review it as well on their sites. So an audience member could see something and review it. Applaud can review it. And basically it connects the proper audience to the proper shows.
That's the goal.
I think that's terrific. What's the next step for it? What's the next step that you're doing?
Well, what I'm really trying to do now is get the word out to more of the event producers themselves, so that they can provide really the quality kind of data that the recommender system needs in order to find who is the right person for each show. So I'm trying to, again, partner more with the promoters themselves, with the theater companies and so forth, to say, hey, if you give me the data that I need that will help promote your show to more people, then I'll do that promotion for you, and it's not going to cost you anything.
This is gorgeous. So you're also providing advertisement as well. So if I'm a producer, I can call up and I can say, I got this amazing drama coming in, and here's the plot line, here's the cast of characters, here's the dates, and please announce my show, and Applaud will handle that.
Right. Hopefully they'll put the data into the system so they don't just call me and I have to do it for them.
Yeah, that would be very nice indeed. So for the cost of just typing in a plot line and everything else, you get instantaneous publicity as well.
Exactly. And then what we ask for on the other side of that is, at the end of your show, to ask your audience, okay, now that you've seen the show, go to Applaud and rate it and tell us what you liked and didn't like about it. And then the next time those people want to see another show, we can tell them, you know, what's the right show that they should be seeing.
So we put that in our playbills on the last page somewhere saying, did you like the show? Well, go to Applaud and tell us all about it.
Yep, and we'll even email you a banner that you can hold up at the end of the show so that you can tell people exactly where to go to rate it.
Is that right? That's so cool. Email me the banner. I'm going to put it on my website. Where'd you get the
it's
name
different for O-Plaud? Each show.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Where'd you get the name O-Plaud?
So, you know, these days when you're trying to come up with a name for a website, you got to find a name that is available, right? I mean, all of the whatever .coms are taken, and just kept trying different variations on different, you know, theater-related terms. And, of course, Applaud with an A is taken, but yep. Applaud with an O was available. And so that's how we settled on that.
I thought it was a clever wink, sort of saying an ovation and applause. So
you know what? From now on, I'm going to say that.
Well, there you go. There you go. I guess my marketing degree means something. Excellent. Are you an artist yourself? Are you a lot of times I will encounter reviewers who are playwrights, actors who are also producers and things like that. Are you a member of the arts brigade as well?
I guess my connection to the artistic world is I've written a few novels that were never published. I do some kind of collage paper art that I just basically hang on my walls and give to friends. But I've never done theater. I do not have a good enough memory to memorize lines or anything like that.
Do like I do, just paraphrase. So you're a literary artist and you're also a fine artist.
I guess you could say that.
What prompted you to head over to the theater for this idea?
You know, I don't watch television, and so my whole gamut of entertainment comes from live events, and so that's kind of what headed me in that direction.
So you even think like the good old days of if you're going to go see entertainment, you're going to the live theater.
Right, and I feel like other people, too, should really get out more. You know, the television industry makes it so easy for us to sit at home on our butts, on our sofas, and watch whatever they want to feed to us. Whereas I think that if you're actually going out to a live show, you can see a lot more variety of entertainment out there. You interact with a lot more people. And, you know, these days, like you said before, the world's getting a little bit more splintered. And I think that if we can all kind of get people interacting together more, it might lead to a better world.
Do you think that would help us intellectually? Do you think the notion of coming together, of seeing live theater, of interacting with an audience might actually improve us intellectually as a community?
Oh, definitely. And again, going along that splintered notion, I mean, when you're just getting information from one source or a small set of sources, you tend to develop a very limited view of the world. And when you interact with more people and see more different ideas and actually get to see different perspectives, I think it just opens up your mind a lot.
Very cool. Very cool. I completely agree. Though I completely agree. Where do you see Applaud in 5 years, in 10 years? What's when the smoke clears, what are we looking at in terms of Applaud?
Well, I think that, again, just getting better and better at the recommendation process to the point where it's really able to sustain itself. And at the same time, where it's able to support the small independent artist community at a price point that they can afford, which is usually zero.
There you go.
And kind of subsidize that by making its money off of, you know, the big ticket items like Madison Square Garden or Barclays Center, where, you know, they need to fill more seats. And so they might be willing to pay a little bit of money to get the word out to more people.
Aha. So there's going to come a point when not only you're bringing the indie art community together into one site, you're going to connect them to everything from Broadway to Madison Square Garden.
So, yes, I'd like to get the whole gamut covered.
So you're hoping to be like the nerve center where everything's going to be. If you want art, you're going to Applaud.
Right.
That's very cool. Do you think it's going to, you being a multidisciplinary artist yourself, you think it's going to transcend where someone can get on there and say, I read this amazing book, I saw this amazing TV show, I went to an art exhibit? Do you think is it going to be the interactive New York Magazine?
I don't know if it will go that far. And I mean, I think a lot of that is already covered by other environments, if you will. I mean, for example, we have Netflix for recommending movies. And of course, Amazon has its own. If you like this product, you'll like this other product. But I think what's kind of unique about the live entertainment industry is it's very ephemeral, right? I mean, if you don't buy a vacuum cleaner today, you can always go out and buy it next month. But if you don't see a show this week, it might not be playing next month. You know, it might be finished with its run. And so I'm really trying to focus on the things that other platforms can't handle, where they just don't know how to deal with things that are so, you know, time sensitive.
Very cool. So you're putting at everyone's fingertips the shows that might not be around past this weekend.
Exactly.
That is simply amazing. Is there any criteria? Like, I know show score, you got to have 8 performances and things like that. Is there a criteria that they need for Oplaud, or is it just, you know, live theater?
Live anything, really. I mean, anything that brings people together is really the point of it. So if you have a one-off show, if you have, even like you said, an arts exhibit, you know, anything that's live and is going to bring people out of their homes and into spaces where they connect with each other is really the target.
Oh, that's excellent. You're my hero. I have been screaming that for a long time, that, you know, everyone's doing their play, and they could be 10 shows in the same festival and they just don't know who's there. They could be 10 shows in the same building and they don't know who's there. You're bringing them all together. And you're bringing them together in the 21st century. They can just do it through their phone. That's really great. That is really, really great. Well, count on me to scream your joys from the highest rafters, and I'll tell all my producer friends that when they're promoting, they got to promote through you.
Thank you, and just send them to tell them to send an email to promote@opplaud.com.
That's easy. Promote. Okay, got it. Good. Great, Andrew. Thank you so much for taking the time and 2 phone calls. to get this information out there. I will tell our listeners again, I'll talk about the website. I'll make sure they have it in writing to see, and you can count on hearing from me far too much.
Thank you, Jay, and happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Same to you. Ciao.
Take care.
Thank you, Andrew. May Oplaud have great success, thus giving us great success in return. Hey, and vice versa. Okay, in the 1970s, 2 kids, one a skinny dude with a flair for sarcasm and a pudgy class clown, hung together collecting comic books and going to famous Monsters of Filmland conventions. Today, my oldest friend, that skinny kid, is now a power broker in the film industry in California. And me? I'm still a pudgy class clown, but now with a mustache. Anyway, we synchronized our time zones, and I connected to California and to Joel Eisenberg.
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Ah, excellent. How are you?
Pretty good. And you?
I am good. I don't know if I'm being recorded or I'm not.
You are, and the editing process will get rid of the commercial for Sprint or whatever it is now by saying, can you hear me now? If I'm on the line, okay. You're on the air.
Hey, everybody.
How are you, my friend? How's everything?
I am good, man. I was just sitting here doing some work in a Sunday morning in Southern California. It is a little too sunny for December. You know, we should be having snow like, you know, the rest of the world, I guess. But we don't. And whereas that may sound like a highfalutin problem, it is not. I miss the snow and I can't stand the sun during this time of year.
Wonderful. Want to trade?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that one of these days.
Okay.
Now The Passion Pit, my podcast, talks to independent artists. And whereas there's a major concentration in terms of theater, nowadays the lines are really blurred. And I wanted to talk to more professionals within the indie film art world. and you cover that beautifully, and you make wonderful transitions into the commercial world as well. So why don't you introduce yourself to our viewers? Tell us who Joel Eisenberg is.
Okay, and if I get too long-winded, cut me off.
Oh,
give me the hook. Okay. Joel Eisenberg here. Let's see, born in Brooklyn, New York, graduated with a special education degree from Brooklyn College. But when I had attained my degree, I had known prior that I had always wanted to be a writer. I really did not want to teach. I did it as a fallback. I did it on and off for 10 years, along with 100 other day jobs. Again, a noble profession, just not what my passion was.
And that's why you wrote that book, How Do You Survive Your Day Job?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And as many people, I guess, listening to Jay's podcast can attest to, people who are in the business or people who are looking to make it in the business, what happens is it's a part of you. I've known Jay for a very long time, and it's been a part of him for as long as I've known him. And the long and the short of it is, for me, I had to follow my bliss, as Joseph Campbell would say. I came out to California. I became an independent writer producer. I love California so much, I moved back to New York and went into teaching for 2 years. the thing is, what happened was as soon as I landed back in New York, and this is the honest truth, I felt that I gave up on my dreams. And I knew in 2 years I'd be back in LA and I'm just going to have to make a go of it. And that's exactly what happened. So since then, I've written for movies. I produce films. I've done TV. I have a television development company called Council Tree Productions. And I'm a novelist. I write fantasy novels, The Chronicles of Ara, and big science fiction horror fantasy guy.
That did very well, actually, The Chronicles of Ara. I'm reading that it was optioned for a series, the whole works. Or am I wrong?
You're on the right page. Basically, what had happened is before we sold the first 200 copies, we were made an offer for an 8-hour television miniseries.
There you go.
Which is very rarely heard of. But, you know, when you're sort of around this town and you're doing the dance and you're networking and all of this, people get to know you and people, sort of judge you as to, can I make money from you? And with that, Ovation Network had made us this very nice and very generous development deal. And without getting into the nitty gritty, it never happened. We made the deal. Money was expended for scripts and pilots and things like this. And the long and the short of it is there was a cap on that money. And the project has since gone into turnaround and we have the rights. So one of my New Year's resolutions is we've been rebranding the books because we are going with a new publisher as well, and we're going to start the process of getting that out to try to sell it again for television. So we'll see what happens.
Excellent. And you have several other projects that are brewing in terms of television. Now, when you say in development, I'm not sure how many people know the real definition of that, because one can make money on a project without it ever happening. One could make no money on a project, and yet there it is running. What does it mean when something's in development, when you see a project developed by, or as you're saying, things are being developed? What does that mean?
Can I answer your question by asking you a question?
Of course.
Okay. Am I allowed to swear?
Oh, my God, yes. Fuck yeah.
Okay. I feel better now. Okay, here's the deal.
On my show, you're wondering what is this? What is this, Sunday morning Bible talk? No, I think we're in good shape. Go right ahead.
Okay, I'm just trying to be respectful here. Here's the deal.
I got you.
The living, breathing, walking definition of development is very much the equivalent of it's all bullshit until the check clears. here's what that means in English. What that means is, everybody and their mother has something in development in Southern California.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I'm a lapsed New Yorker, but I will always consider myself a New Yorker. I could never consider myself a Los Angelino. I just don't know why, or a Californian. I just can't. But
it's that New York accent that still shows through. There you go.
Only when I speak to my New York buds. But the thing is, though, that in development means that you have an idea, you have something on paper, you have maybe some attachments of talent, actors, directors, writers. Maybe you have some money behind you and you're going to produce a pilot on your own, whatever it is. The thing is, any unrealized project that is working towards realization before it has full funding, meaning before it enters the pre-production phase, is in development. And the "it's all bullshit until the check clears" deal is just very simply that 99% of all projects, I'm sure there's a legitimate statistic there somewhere, but I'm almost positive it would approach that number, never get out of the development phase because, as most of us know, money for these projects is intensely hard to find. And that's part of the job.
Gotcha. I interviewed the producer of a film I'm working on called Free Range, and we're raising $200,000 just to start the project. So when you're talking about, you know, money into something until it happens, so that sort of makes sense.
It's not unusual at all.
But you still get it's still a position. It's like there are people who work in development, so it's essentially it's still something that that one can get paid for lack of a better term. A project in development, you can still get paid for, essentially.
100%. Here's the thing: most studios and funded production companies will have a development department.
There you go.
The development entity, the person or people who work within that department, are typically responsible for sifting through scripts, reading the first three pages. If they don't like the first three pages, they have to just sort of pass on it. Sometimes there are readers who will read the whole things, rather the entire thing, and what will happen is they'll do a little report on it. And it's called a coverage in vernacular over here. And basically what a coverage is they'll have a little synopsis of the script and its strengths and its weaknesses, and they will grade it, and then they will also recommend it as a pass or recommend it as a fail. If it fails, it doesn't go anywhere. If it's recommended and they want to shoot it up to an exec, we'll know that too from what the paperwork says. The thing is, within that position, that is the biggest part. It's basically maybe attaining material sometimes, or more usually going through material to judge whether or not it's really sellable and if the company should put money behind it. So that is a position that people do get paid for. That is a legitimate position. Absolutely.
Cool. Very cool. You've also gone so far as to produce sizzle reels for various projects. I remember seeing a couple of really brilliant ones that you've done. Tell us about producing the sizzle reel. Tell us about producing that first level.
Sure. Okay. So here's the thing. And also just to quickly piggyback on the last question, so there's no confusion on it. Again, a development person working for a company gets paid. A project in development is typically, if it's not with a studio or not with a company, and is just with an individual or with their own small group or a group of friends or whatever, a project such as that is considered in development until there is financing. And in that regard, there is, you know, really nothing to be paid for. So I just wanted to make that distinction.
Oh, we had you with bullshit till the check clears.
Perfect. So, all right, can you just, I'm sorry, because I
creating a sizzle reel. Creating a sizzle reel.
Okay, creating a sizzle reel is very, very similar to producing a short film. Sizzle reels generally will last 3 to 5 minutes, ideally, typically on the lower end of that spectrum. What happens is the reason why we will put money into sizzle reels, say $30,000, $35,000, mm-hmm. $25,000, whatever it is because that helps sell the project that we want to sell. Now, when I say it helps sell, it'll either help us attain financing for the project, or it'll help us going to a larger production company or a studio to where we could show them our vision. So it's important for an artist, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many out here, I guess, in the industry, that someone that you show the project to needs to see the vision of that project. A sizzle reel is a visual representation of your project. If you go on a meeting and you're pitching, I don't know, whatever it is, Lionsgate, and they have an affinity for your sizzle reel, then the real conversation begins. Typically, from my experience, I found out that, because I own a TV development company, I've, you know, basically found out that scripts alone are that much tougher to attain full financing for, or to turn into a movie, or to turn into a show. But if you have a sizzle reel in addition to the script, and maybe a couple of other sales materials here and there, it only helps. The risk is you lose your $35,000, but the pro is you could sell it and make substantially more than that.
Indeed. That was going to be my question, just how valuable is the sizzle reel in the end, and it shows it's quite valuable.
Absolutely.
You're also, as we mentioned about the Chronicles of Ara, you're a popular author. You're an established author. I was looking at your list of books. I was most impressed. Tell us about the author Joel Eisenberg.
Yeah, the author Joel Eisenberg, like any number of other authors out there, is an insane son of a bitch who cannot sleep at night, wakes up at 2 o'clock in the morning. By three, has finished two venti cups of coffee. If anybody goes to Starbucks, venti is the largest. And writes and causes trouble on Facebook when I take my breaks from writing. But it's true though. The thing is, between the hours, and I would not recommend this to really anybody because thankfully right now I'm healthy, but I don't know how much longer I can keep up that schedule. But the thing is, it's such a sort of natural for me to wake up that early. It's in the body clock. And what happens is when I write, it's before my wife and my dog wake up. And that's very, very important. That's before the phone rings. That's before life's kind of duties get in the way. It's my time. And for me, my peak creativity is between the hours of 2 and 8 a.m. So I have 6 hours to play with in terms of writing, which it's just something that to me needs to be done. If I don't write, I'd lose my mind. Terrence Stamp, who many of you know is an actor, he played General Zod, Superman, sure. Superman 2, and he said if he couldn't act, he'd be a serial killer. And the thing is that when you're a creative individual and you wear many hats, you have to make time to make this happen. And for me personally, as an author, that's my peace. That's actually my calm. The rest of the day I get wired because I'm producing and I'm on the phone or I'm fighting with producers or I'm arguing or I'm this. And I'm a nice guy. When I say fighting with producers, we're talking creative arguments.
You're from New York, so screaming means discussing and fighting means chatting. I got it.
You got it. The fuck yous fly and you know, considerably worse, but it's all good at the end. We hug it out.
Of course.
In terms of being an author, that's my calm. That's my honest answer. That's my peace. Because I actually, if I was a consistently selling New York Times number one fiction author, which I am not, if I was, I would do that full time. That's my passion when it comes to writing. It's a certain kind of indulgence that, to be completely candid, I do not get from television or film, which I love, and I love those businesses, but I don't get the same sort of creative juice that I do from being an author.
Now, you said fiction writer. That's your choice of poison there. It's because you've written nonfiction and fiction.
I write nonfiction frequently, actually. But fiction is my choice of poison, absolutely. The thing is, you mentioned a book I did before, How to Survive a Day Job, where I interviewed celebrities about how they attained their dream careers and the day jobs that they had to go through to get to that point. Nonfiction. I write articles online pretty consistently, and everything from politics to movies to any issue of the day that is annoying me.
You are immensely prolific on that. I was looking up some of your articles, and the hits would just keep coming. I was like, wow. And okay, so now it explains it. 6 hours in the morning. There you go.
Now, there you go. Yeah. I mean, you know, what happens is if you use that time wisely, you do get work done.
Sure.
You know, I try. I try.
That was great.
I love nonfiction, but fiction is my juice.
Fiction is the juice. And it's not so much the 2 a.m. until, it's the fact that it's totally calm, that no one's bugging you, that your brain can just fly. I interviewed a playwright years ago, and one of the remarks he said, which I thought was great, he said, "By day I sell men's socks and cry uncontrollably, and then I wrote in the evening." And I just thought it was brilliant. Give us an example of your day, because you have already told us you're as you once said to me, you're pitching and bitching. You're writing, you're developing, you produce sizzle reels as well. You've been executive producer on projects, etc. You're the Renaissance man in terms of the indie arts in sense of film. What's a day for you? What's a common day for you?
Common day for me is waking up that early in the morning, doing exactly what I'm doing right at the second with my four-legged hairy daughter Coco trying to get my attention. I mean, rubbing her hair here. So
to our listeners, that's a dog he's talking about, not that he's insulting his child. Thank you.
Exactly. So the ever see It's Alive? It's kind of like no, that's even that four legs. Anyway, the two to eight is the authoring, the writing. Then 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock to maybe 9 o'clock, I'm eating with my wife. After 9 o'clock, I'll start with a lot of my producing, which means a ton of phone calls, a ton of emails, and I do that too within the 2 to 8 kind of thing, but not as much. I try to really do as much writing as I can. But most of the producing really lasts me until about 5 or 6 o'clock at night, where I'm emailing and making a bunch of phone calls and taking a lot of meetings in Southern California, or actually I should say in this business, the business of independent film and independent television. It's sort of de rigueur out here to take a meeting for the sake of scheduling a meeting for the sake of scheduling another meeting for the sake of taking an alternate meeting. It's, we'll set up meetings to take more meetings and more meetings. Everybody loves having meetings.
Gotcha.
The thing is then after I'll eat dinner about 6. And then because I do have a strange kind of drive, I will work probably until 10 or 11 and then the eyes will just go and that'll be it. There are times I'll fall asleep at 7. There are times I'll fall asleep at 8. When I fall asleep at 7 or 8, my wife calls me an old man and gets on my ass. So, you know, I will just try to, you know, but lately it's the energy is there. And, you know, I'm usually from 2 o'clock to like 11, which shows you how much sleep I get every night. So I don't get 3 hours of sleep every night. Like I said, there are nights I'll fall asleep at 7 or 8. Those are usually my crash nights, and that could happen a couple of times a week or 3 times a week. But 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, rather, is usually waking time. So it's nonstop work. It actually is tough for me as a driven artist, I guess, to shut it off. And even being married, I'll be completely blunt, for almost 20 years now, it's still a challenge to shut it off and actually have some fun. So the events I go to tend to be events at places like the Writers Guild or networking events or things like this, to where it is all peripherally related. If we were going to go to somebody's birthday party, I'd go. But it'll take me time to actually stop thinking about what I have to do in 3 hours. So the thing is this, this is like part of a whole larger sort of obsession with me personally as to like the origin and the nature of creativity. And I get very into that head sometimes, which gets awfully pretentious. But the thing is, for whatever reason, it's all part of the fuel. And just to sort of end it, so I'm not talking too much about it, I used to run a series of networking groups myself for 10 years. And we were hosted by Paramount Studios, Warner Brothers Studios, Sunset Gower Studios, and so on. And it was about leveling the playing field between being a filmmaker and being a finance person. Because filmmakers are always looking for money, and if you're a finance person of a certain note that is looking to play a little bit, we wanted to meet you.
There you go.
And the thing is that it was very, very apparent doing this for 10 years, meeting thousands and thousands of filmmakers, that their personal lives and their professional lives were one and the same. And that I was not unique in terms of being driven in certain ways. What got in my way back when were the day jobs, because every day job I ever had, I knew that I was going to be doing what I'm doing now for a living. I just didn't know when I'd get there.
Right. Well said. That's really well said. I'm sure there are so many nodding heads when they hear this about how many people are sitting at a job they just don't want to be at because they know this is not where it's going to be. This is not where you're going to land. Really well.
Hey, let me tell you, man, because I, you know, again, teaching specifically is a noble profession. I am in the midst of writing even, you know, like on the nonfiction side, sort of like an expose as to what goes on behind, you know, the walls of the classrooms. But I bring it up because I remember vividly when I was in Brooklyn and I had a time clock in and time clock out. All I kept thinking of, you know what, it's a noble profession. I get along with some of the students. Some of the students I don't. Other students love me. I won Teacher of the Year 1 year, all this stuff. But I was like, when could I stop? When does this end? When can I just go home and write all day long? Because after school, when everybody else was going drinking and whatever they were doing, I was going home and working on scripts. So, you know, I just needed to get to that point. But I will tell anybody listening to this podcast, I don't know where you are in your lives, but you're going to hear a lot over the years, if you haven't already, that, oh, you know, persistence pays the race and this and that. And yeah, it does. But you're always going to face temptation, temptation to quit, temptation to bring more money in, temptation for, you know, stability, which is normal. Who wouldn't want stability? The issue, though, is if being an artist is who you truly are, then you already know that you have to do anything you need to do to get there. And I used to, when I came out to L.A. the first time before moving back to New York, and even when I came back to L.A., I used to just go to all of these seminars and meet whoever I can. I made my business cards. I switched cards. I became a pain in the ass to the people who I needed to become pains in the asses to. And, you know, after a while, people started knowing who I was. And I figured, you know what, I'm doing something right. And I had to keep it up. And then after a while, it wasn't an issue for me to start asking for a favor. Can you look at this script? Or can you do this? Or can you introduce me to this person? And the thing is that there's nothing wrong with asking, but you got to make sure to give in return. And for you to be able to give to somebody who doesn't necessarily need something from you, who is in a position of influence, who could help your career, you need to have some sort of schooling, real life schooling behind you. You need to be rejected. You need to sit in that audience and watch others talk. You need to just pine to be in their positions to where you could be speaking, you know, next week, next year, whatever it is. You need to make it happen. And there is no magic bullet, but at the end of the day, if you work hard enough, if you network, and even if you live in Idaho or Ohio or somewhere that is so far outside of, you know, the industry, so to speak, there's the internet. And I've met more people and more professionals and more influencers over the internet, over Facebook, over social media, who have actually impacted my career. So you have all the tools at hand. You have more tools now than Jing and I ever had growing up. We didn't even have computers.
We had stamps.
But now you have it all. You had stamps, yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, it's. I don't mean to get on my horse here, Jay, but the end of the day, it's like, for me, we need as many talented people creating art, especially in these times, as possible. We need these viewpoints. To me, artists are immensely important. And, you know,
and you're also saying that you need, and you bring it up when you said you need to be rejected. You need to sit in the audience and listen to others. You need to have the humility to say, okay, I want to be there. Let me hear how they got there. I want to learn that. So I need to get to them. And also, if you're going to turn to someone, and you're so right, if you're going to say, do me a favor and read this script, when they call you back and say, okay, do me a favor, you have to be ready to comply.
Yeah. You absolutely. Let me give you an example. You know, for the hell of it, I'll throw some names out there. I had a script, and you'll relate to this. It was called Ghoulishly Yours, William M. Gaines. And basically, yeah, it was exactly that. It was a biography of William Gaines, who created EC Comics. EC Comics were the publishers of Tales from the Crypt. For those who don't know, that was the HBO show back in the 80s and the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Comic book first in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Vault of Horror, weird fantasy, all this stuff. I got the rights from the family. And I wanted to bring one person back. one person I really wanted to come back and just tear this motherfucker apart. And that person was John Landis, who directed the Blues Brothers Animal House, but for this, you know, An American Werewolf in London and so on.
Twilight Zone movie, The Whole Works.
So the thing is that I called his agent. Because I knew, by the way, that John was a friend of Forey Ackerman's, who created Famous Monsters. They were very close. And this was when, and I knew he was an EC Comics aficionado. So it was a natural for me. So I called his agent, didn't get a call back. I call his agent back a month later, didn't get a call back. I call his agent back a third time, no call back. But 2 weeks later, I get a call from that agency. And the guy gets on the phone, and his name was Abram Nalibotsky, and that was John's agent at the time. Now, Abram gets on the phone and goes, look, you know, you're sort of, you know, what is it that you want? You're calling the office. You're leaving these messages. What is it that you want? And I'm figuring at that very moment, I had to, you know, I basically had 10 seconds to sell him. I said, here's the deal. I'm not financed, so don't ask. I want to get John Landis to read the script. It's EC Comics. It's Bill Gaines. I want to attach him. I don't have money. Can I get the script to him? Just like that. I was totally blunt, honest, because those are questions that I was going to be asked anyway, and I wanted to overcome those objections from the beginning. So he goes, you know what? If I'm interested, if he's interested, I'll talk to him. You know, whatever. You have a nice day. Blah, 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 blah. That was the end of the call. Don't hear anything for a month. I come home one day, and my light is flashing on what was then my voicemail recorder.
Oh, the good old days. Yes.
I press play. I'm talking like maybe a dozen years ago already, 12, 13 years ago. I press play, and I get something like, Joel, my name is John Landis. This is my cell number. This is my home number. This is my editing number. Why don't you come over and make you some bagels and lox? Let's talk about Ghoulishly Yours. And I'm like.
And you peed in your pants. There you go.
I'm like, son of a bitch. Because what had happened was it was persistence. Johnson's become a mentor in the business. He's one of my close friends in the business. And the reason I bring him up again is because what happened, we never made the film. We had false starts. The thing is that, you know, we became close. He's become a friend. He's introduced me to other people. I've, you know, helped him out. You know, the thing is that you can do this. Persistence works. Everything I had mentioned works, but don't give up because it's a waste of good material. The whole issue of bringing that story up was only to show that a schlub from Brooklyn who knew nobody can get an influencer or a former influencer or however you want to say it on the telephone or get to them somehow, some way, if you try hard enough. And half of your job is to get to those influencers who can get you whatever it is that you need, that money, that director, that right, whatever it is. That's all.
May we all be such schlubs.
There you go.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. This is really marvelous. Oh, my God. For me, it was a masterclass also. This was absolutely marvelous. Thank you so much for spending time with us. I'm not going to take up any more of your time here. I'll buzz you back in a little bit, and we can talk like human beings.
Sounds good.
and thank you so much for this. I'm going to make sure our listeners know where to find all information on you and your work and everything like that, and I really appreciate the time.
Sure. Anytime.
Thank you, my friend.
Take care.
And I'll talk to you soon. Ciao.
I got to tell you, I haven't seen him for many, many years. And when I heard all that was going on with him, I was thrilled. I was really, really thrilled. He deserves it. And so much more. Okay, next time we'll chat with some dynamic souls that think out of the box. Until next time.